The Wall Street Journal declares that giving birth has gotten a lot riskier, and so to mitigate those risks, they are advising everybody to stop reproducing and end the species. All this and a whole lot more on an optimistic, sunshiny Daddy on Board podcast, which is right around the corner. Welcome, parents and their progeny, to a podcast entitled Daddy on Board, brought to you exclusively by show sponsors Cobra Electronics. This is a parenting podcast purveying a paternal perspective, and I am your host, Mike Quackenbush. You may know me from the world of professional wrestling, which is largely responsible for all the broken parts of my body, or from my gigs hosting the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe and the Trending Show, which are largely responsible for my rabid cult following on the Iberian Peninsula. While I do have a healthy batch of the kind of wacky stories that I like to convey each and every week here on Daddy on Board, I'm afraid there is no skirting that story, which affects all of us with children in our lives. So let's talk a little bit about Newtown, Connecticut. All right. Well, Benedict Carey of the New York Times wrote a piece that really puts the focus in all this where it belongs, and that's on our kids. He asks this: what have they heard? And Carey counsels, listen to your children's fears, dispel any rumors that they've heard, and be honest with them, sharing as much detail as a child is able to handle. Therapists who treat childhood trauma said on Friday that parents talking to their children about the mass shooting should address the news directly and soon, allowing the child to lead with questions and concerns. Parents can no longer control what their children know by simply turning off the television or radio. Many children will know what is happening from mobile devices and from social media. Dr. Andrew Gerber, a child psychiatrist at Columbia, said that parents should come to terms with their own feelings about the massacre before talking to their children, so they can convey a certain amount of thoughtfulness and understanding rather than raw trauma. Dr. Robert Abramovitz, a child psychiatrist at Hunter College, says to be careful not to introduce a potential new fear to the equation. He says, ask what their worst fear is and address that. He also says to reinforce coping skills that your child may have already used, suggesting, remember the last time you were afraid? Remember what you did to calm down. He says that this gives the child a feeling of control. Discussing some of the practical facets of it are important as well. For example, does a child know his or her school's emergency procedures? What is the family's communication plan should something happen? Mommy blogger KJ Dell'Antonia of the Motherload blog on nytimes.com seems less interested in having the chat at all. She writes this: what if the child in front of you doesn't appear worried at all? Do we have to talk to our children about every tragedy? As awash in information as adults are, many children, especially younger ones, simply aren't in that position. It may be difficult, but also unnecessary, to protect them from hearing about a news event at all. And a child whose television comes from Disney and whose primary use of a mobile device involves throwing birds at pigs may not be inundated with information in the ways we fear. Nancy Rappaport, an associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, says that some children may be more vulnerable to these kinds of fears, but many may just say, oh, that's too bad, and move on. This is normal behavior for children whose focus is still naturally on themselves. Dr. Rappaport suggests a strategy that's commonly used for anxiety in children. It's called worried thought, brave thought. Quote, we teach kids to counter a worried thought with a brave thought. Know that although the worried thought may come back, the brave thoughts are always there as well. End quote. An example of a worried thought might be, a shooter will come to my child's school and there's nothing I can do about it. And you would counter it with a thought like this: school shootings are still rare and people are working tirelessly day and night to make them rarer still. If you're going to talk to your children, start with a brave thought, Dr. Rappaport recommends. If the worried thought returns while you're talking, acknowledge it out loud with your child. It's all right to show that you, too, worry about these things. But then bring a brave thought back around again. And if you sense anxiety in your child, you could even share this particular worried thought, brave thought strategy with them. Now, I think these sources are some reassuring voices, perhaps, to parents that are looking to communicate with their children about the tragedy of Sandy Hook. But there is another side of this equation that is every bit as important to consider, and I think Idaho-based blogger Lisa Long tackled it head-on. Long is the mother of a boy who suffers from an unspecified mental illness. In a piece that went viral, she wrote for theBlueReview.org, entitled "I Am Adam Lanza's Mother." She details the numerous times her 13-year-old son has threatened to kill her, even at knife point, and threatened to kill himself as well. She recounts stories of police officers wrestling her son onto gurneys and trips to the hospital emergency room, to countless doctors, and even to mental institutions. She does an enormously effective job of making you understand the physical threat his unstable personality poses not just to her, but to her other children, ages 7 and 9 as well. She's heard everything from autism and ADHD to oppositional defiant or intermittent explosive disorder applied to her son, but no one can definitively pinpoint his particular illness. Lisa is not alone in this, as the sites that carried her story in the past week have collectively seen over 5,000 people respond to her cry for help. She bravely acknowledges that the problem is too big for her to handle alone, especially now that her 13-year-old is nearly as strong as she is, and more difficult than ever to pacify. She also offers this sad reality. The three biggest mental illness treatment centers in the United States today are in Rikers Island, the L.A. County Jail, and Cook County Jail. That's because mental illness rates among inmates in the United States is quintuple that of the non-incarcerated population. She's not about to have her son charged with a crime to get him into the system so that he can get the treatment he needs, even though that exact thing has been suggested to her. Instead, her poignant piece is a call to talk less about guns in the wake of Newtown, Connecticut, and more about mental illness. Sarah Kendzior, a contributor to Al Jazeera and The Atlantic, as well as other publications, took Lisa to task for this, referencing older blogs by Long in which she discusses her own issues dealing with an abusive husband, a bitter custody battle, and more. Kendzior criticizes Long for being irresponsible about maintaining her son's privacy in the matter. Then journalist Sarah Jones joined the conversation and brought what I think had only very briefly been termed a mommy blogger war into a bit of perspective for the rest of us. Lisa Long never anticipated that her post would go viral, so while it's important to clarify that she may have inadvertently stigmatized her son, as most mentally ill people do not become mass murderers, it's also important to remember that she probably had no way of knowing that her blog post would go viral. This shouldn't diminish the importance of her personal story or its impact on our national dialogue about mental health issues. So between Jones's contribution there on the matter, and then Kendzior and Long getting together, all of this hubbub has resulted in everyone making nice in the blogosphere and then joining together to promote a real dialogue about our healthcare system and mental illness. In the days since the shooting, alarming statistics about mass murder have come out, and you've seen them the same as I have. The numbers committed by those with mental illness, the number of mass murders in the United States versus everywhere else in the world. It's frightening for a parent in today's America to look at these numbers. Worse, the policymakers that influence our healthcare system and write gun control regulation are, as best as I can tell, bought and paid for by giant corporate interests, lobbyists, and special interest groups that see power and influence as life's ultimate goals. When my little superhero is old enough to understand, I will tell him that people who put power and profits above the safety and health of those with less influence and less money are the world's true supervillains. I wish I had something more profound to add to this discussion right now, not as if more needs to be said about the tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut. I'd move to Canada if they'd just replace all those god-awful Tim Hortons with Starbucks. The mass murder capital of the planet is a weird place to call home. I want to take a break from this right now and talk a little bit about our show sponsor. And when I come back, I've got, well, less sobering stuff to talk about. All throughout 2012, this podcast and others like it on the Grizzly Productions Network have been supported thanks to the sponsorship of Cobra Electronics. Now, I know you've heard me talk about them before, but I want to ask you now more than ever to pay a visit to our friends over at Cobra.com because for a limited time only, that is, until January the 3rd, virtually all of their best-selling items are being offered with free shipping. If you want to find the best deals on cutting-edge radar and laser detectors, GPS navigations, marine electronics, CB radios, two-way radios, and on and on and on, go to Cobra.com and on their left-hand navigation under our products categories, look for the link to the specials section. You'll see some of their best-selling items right now are on deep discount, more so than you'll find any other time of year, and you'll find that dozens of items are now being offered as buy one, get one free offers. And best of all, as I said, until January 3rd, you'll get free shipping on any of these devices. So if you've got a little something coming your way, maybe you get one of those Visa gift cards or something like that, and you're wondering what to spend it on, especially for those of you that are out on the road all the time like I am, you're going to want to take a look over at Cobra.com. I guarantee you there's something over there to make your life simpler, and that really is their specialty at Cobra.com. They simplify your life. I know from firsthand experience traveling everywhere that I go with their Cobra Eye radar system, it's made me a safer and more alert driver. Well, now you could have one or one of dozens of other products of theirs at the lowest possible price you're going to see throughout the year and with free shipping. So don't waste another moment and do me a favor by visiting our long-standing show sponsor, Cobra, over at their website, Cobra.com. This podcast would not be possible without them. Thanks.
Okay, some groundbreaking stuff here. The Wall Street Journal cautions those considering reproduction, giving birth has never been riskier. Yeah, I tried not to bury the lead too deep here. In the previous decade, there have been sharp increases in the rate of severe complications from childbirth. Emergencies during delivery, such as cardiac arrest, respiratory distress, and kidney failure, increased by 75%. According to a new study by the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Many delivery complications occur in the 4 million births every year here in the United States, but severe ones only affect 52,000 mothers per year. The Wall Street Journal would like those numbers to come down, and I think by that they just want less births. Leading causes for the increase is the number of pregnant women who are older, obese, or have chronic conditions such as diabetes or kidney disease, which put them at higher risk. But healthy women, too, can experience major complications such as severe bleeding, which is the most common cause of death after childbirth. That is to say, it's the most common cause of death post-childbirth. I don't want you to envision a list where number one is childbirth and number two is severe bleeding. You'll be glad to know that the Center for Disease Control, or CDC, to you X-Files fans out there, is taking charge of all this death and complications and whatnot. Hospitals are borrowing strategies from the military to train staff in teamwork and care protocols that have been proven to reduce injuries, minimize trauma, and avert deaths in a program that is partially funded by the CDC. Obstetrics teams are holding drills to train doctors and nurses in rapid response, using simulated emergencies that include fake blood, robots that mimic physiological states, and actresses standing in as patients. Since the project's inception, the rate of liability claims filed at participating hospitals has dropped by 39%, says Susan DeVore, chief executive of Premier Incorporated's Perinatal Safety Initiative. Like you, my main concerns here are these. One, is there high fructose corn syrup in the fake blood they're using for practice? Two, how many of these robots have gone rogue during a simulation? Three, what are the actresses being paid for this kind of work, and are the casting directors gender biased? That is a lot of info. So just to quickly summarize that, the Wall Street Journal wants fewer babies. That's your takeaway. As if the Wall Street Journal wasn't bad enough, here comes the New Republic to rock your world all over again. Fathers have been getting older at the same rate as mothers. Let that sink in for a moment. In 2012, women are having their first child about 4 years later than they were in 1970. A first-time mother tended to be 21 years of age 40 years ago. Now that average is 25 years old. This holds true for the fathers as well, in case you thought that statement about getting older at the same rate had something to do with the space-time continuum. So how does this phenomenon correlate to the almost 20% increase in emotional and developmental disabilities in children that we've seen since 1997? Well, the science on that is still out, but the researchers say that we aren't concerned enough about what this generation-long science experiment will yield. I was kind of waiting for the guy in that Thomas Dolby music video to appear on my screen and yell out, "Listen to the Wall Street Journal thing." But there is some science to discuss as it relates to maternal age. Past the age of 35, in most cases, the chances that children will carry a chromosomal abnormality rise sharply. In a trisomy abnormality, a third chromosome inserts itself into one of the 23 pairs that most of us carry, so that a child's cells carry 47, instead of 46, chromosomes. The most notorious of these insertions causes Down syndrome. Other common ones give children cleft palates, mental retardation, and an 80% likelihood of dying in their first year. Another one, Edwards syndrome, for example, which is characterized by oddly shaped heads and clenched hands. In half of all Edwards syndrome babies, they die in the first week of life. But you're not off the hook here, dads. The science journal Nature, which apparently was the best title they could come up with, concluded that the number of genetic mutations that can be acquired from a father increases by 2 every year of his life and doubles every 16, so that a 36-year-old man is twice as likely as a 20-year-old to bequeath a mutation to his children. The publication speculates that the greater number of older dads could help to explain the 78% rise in autism cases in the last 10 years. I'd like to point out, though, that greater awareness of autism and even overdiagnosis of autism spectrum disorders are not considered by the fine folks at the journal Nature. I'd also like to point out that the journal Nature is not printed on recycled paper. The journal Nature. On the bright side of this increasingly dark podcast, let me advise you, dear Dob Bobber, that study after study has shown that the children of older parents grow up in wealthier households, they lead more stable lives, and they do better overall in school. And these studies were conducted by the National Institute of Health, which has an excellent reputation for not lying. What else do we have for you? So I know this has been a batch of really sobering stories this week on Daddy on Board, and I guess I better lighten things up before I ask you to go to the iTunes store and leave me your 5-star review, which is really, really important. My bosses want you to leave me a 5-star review. It would really help me out a lot with the bosses if you left me a 5-star review. And if you're feeling like a loser, don't worry about it, because we are nowhere, you, me, or anybody else we know, as big a loser as this dude. A 45-year-old man was arrested this past Sunday after he exposed himself to children waiting in line to have their photos taken with Santa Claus at a downtown Seattle department store. Police said the man was lurking around a group of children with his zipper down and his genitals exposed around 5th and Pine Streets. The man was seen drinking a bottle of hard lemonade, police said, which answers a lot of questions I've always had about those hard lemonade ads I've seen on TV. Police said the man had also been arrested for lewd conduct just 2 days earlier. So he got out pretty quick, I guess, is the moral of the story there. Yeah, man of the year, leading candidate right now. You know, Daddy on Board is not the only parenting-centric podcast here in the Grizzly Productions Network. No, it is not. You might want to check in over on the Spectrum, the Autism Show, which is hosted by the husband and wife team of Don and Jen Wade. It's extremely informative, and I think you'll like it a bunch if autism has touched your life or you know someone that it has. And we also have Mommy Beta. In fact, my trending show co-hostess, Natalie Morris, is over there on Mommy Beta. It's a podcast and it's also a blog. In fact, in a recent blog of hers, barely a week old, entitled Demagogue on the Shelf, she rails against Elf on the Shelf. She calls it a charade and says that it's fear-mongering. Also in the blog, she uses a laughable concept called positive discipline, and I want you to know you're getting that wrong, Natalie. You discipline them when they do the bad stuff, the negative stuff. Don't discipline them when they're doing the right stuff. That's really counterproductive. In any event, she feels that using Elf on the Shelf is a little bit manipulative, and the people that responded to her piece tended to agree. So we threw it out there on our Facebook fan page, which we do maintain here at the Daddy on Board, and asked you, do you use Elf on a Shelf? Tell us about it. We're going to talk about it, and and we're going to talk about it right now. Kimberly James says that she does use Elf on the Shelf so that when her son comes at her with the empty cardboard roll of wrapping paper, she can point to Elvis the Elf and say, "He's watching you." Her son's also told her that they've put one of these elves in every classroom at his school. That seems really odd, the classroom thing. Lazaro Abalos, whose name I probably just mispronounced, wrote, "We have Rudy the Elf. Kids 3 and 5 years old, and they wake up every morning and race to find Rudy to see where he is. I've heard my 5-year-old a couple of times negotiating with Rudy the Elf on what presents she wants him to tell Santa she wants." Chad Ingalls checked in. You know, I did bring up the elf last week when I had misread someone's comment, and says that he prefers the idea of a spanking elf as well. Yeah, I bet you it would burn through a lot of batteries, though, Chad. I'm not saying I wouldn't buy those batteries, I'm just saying. Michael Sean wrote to me, he said this, "Elf on a Shelf has become a tradition. Elfie reminds my son that even though Santa may not be present, he is someone who watches out for him, an emissary, if you will, Michael. Elfie lets Santa know if my son belongs on the naughty or nice list on Christmas Eve." All right. Well, I think that is the express purpose. If I understand Elf on a Shelf correctly, that's its main function, right? It's sort of like a sentinel for Santa. And part of the appeal of it is that at night, once your child goes to sleep, that the elf returns to the North Pole to deliver a report. You know, I guess, you know, it doesn't have a cell phone to text the report or whatever. And then returns in the morning before the child awakes. And so the challenge for the child then is to locate the elf in the house. The challenge for the parent, of course, is to find a new place for the elf to be every night. Eric Walls checked in with me on my Facebook fan page on this, saying, "However, my boys do not fear the elf. So now it's just become a game to see who can find it in the morning." All right, I buy that. Kathleen Hill says that her boss uses the Elf on the Shelf to make her son behave, and it works. Well, that's good. If it didn't work, I mean, chuck it, right? Carol Phillips Heath wrote to me, "I've been using Elf, there's his name, Little, for the just-turned-3 granddaughter. She doesn't really get it, and was very upset when her milk was turned green by the elf. I don't know how the elf did that, Carol, but that one probably needs to be burned in effigy or something. If your elf's turning milk green, I think it's time to ask the elf to move on." Holly Johnson Kim wrote to me, "My 4-year-old just loves her elf, Joe. It is a wonderful reminder to listen to Mommy and Daddy because Joe is always watching. It's also fun to watch her look for him every morning when she wakes up, since he comes back from the North Pole every morning before she wakes up." See, this verifies what I was saying earlier about the travel arc of the elf. And I want to say this about the Elf on a Shelf as well as Santa Claus and, you know, other holiday-centric type characters, perhaps like the Easter Bunny. The idea that Elf on the Shelf, goes back to the North Pole and then returns every night, as well as like the idea that Santa... And you think about what you know about the hemispheres, right? You know, it's not daylight everywhere, so, you know, he's working half the planet at a time. Even so, are we giving our children, like, a real misconception about, like, the geography of planet Earth? Like, do you think our kids are going to grow up to be, like, super terrified when they realize how gigantic the planet is? They're like, "Oh, man, I don't know about this elf going to the North Pole every night. And, like, what if you live in the Southern Hemisphere? Like, what are you telling your kids with the elf? That, yeah? See, it's thought-provoking stuff like that that gets you to tune into the Dob." Trisha Schmitz chimed in about this elf thing, writing, "My kids behave without the elf on the shelf. They know Santa is watching. Two of them are older, 11 and 14 years old. My 5-year-old wants one very much. There is one at her school, and she loves that elf." It's better than finding the elf creepy. I think that elf would give me nightmares. Judy Short wrote to me, "Mama and Daddy want to see if Nico will mind anyone in the house. Could just ask Grandma. Answer will be, he does mind me." Judy, I'm baffled by what you wrote there. I'm not sure I understood all that. I'll read it again later off the air and it'll come to me. Like a light bulb will go off over my head. Andrea Roberts Norberg also wrote to me, "I don't use Elf on a Shelf, and I hope we never do. They are too creepy to me." See, that's something I can get behind, Andrea. I do find them to be a little bit creepy. Thanks for checking in with your own Elf on the Shelf business. If you have an alternate to Elf on the Shelf, you know, like Demon in the Corner or something like that, I'd like to hear about that one. You know, or if you have the spanking elf, could you let me know about like what the battery life on Spanking Elf is. I'd like to know more about it. You can catch me on Twitter. I'm at TheDaddyOnBoard. Drop it off on the Facebook fan page or the Google Plus page. We collect information from these social media outlets before presenting a new Daddy on Board, which I make roughly every 7 days, if you haven't caught on to the pattern. Before I deliver little victories to you, which will actually be little victory, because I'm going to gobble it all up this week, I wanted to let you know, December 29th, if you've got nothing better going on, you're up in the Lehigh Valley, why don't you come over to the West End Youth Center, as an all-ages professional wrestling show will be conducted there, which features tons of my trainees from Chikara Wrestle Factory. This happens under the banner of Wrestling is Fun. It's meant to be enjoyed by all. It won't insult your intelligence or make you embarrassed for sitting at a professional wrestling event. Go and see Wrestling is Fun on December 29th. If you can't be there, you can also stream it live on your computer or mobile device for just $5. 9 matches for $5, you can't beat that. Now, if even $5 is too much, I want to let you know on February 2nd, the newest, latest, and greatest national holiday is taking place. It's National Pro Wrestling Day. This year it's being hosted in Philadelphia at the Derby Inc. Gardens on Spring Garden Street. This is free to the public. This one is, get a load of this, 20 matches long, starting at 1 o'clock p.m. Once again, it's free to the public. If you can't be there, though, you could purchase it as a pay-per-view event through smvod.com. 24 different wrestling organizations are working together to make this possible. Don't miss out on National Pro Wrestling Day. I'll be there. I'll be wrestling fellow podcaster Colt Cabana. You might know him from The Art of Wrestling. We'll be doing no podcasting, but a whole lot of wrestling when we square off at National Pro Wrestling Day. And I also want to take this opportunity to wish all of you sanity throughout the holidays. I mean that sincerely, from one parent to another. Without further ado here, this last pre-holiday edition of Daddy on Board, I want to share my own little victory with you as it relates to my 3-year-old son, Elliot, who, through supreme mental focus, and perhaps a tad bit of guilt-tripping from the parents, but through supreme mental focus of his own, just decided one day that he was potty-trained, and he really was. It was amazing. He was resistant, he was off and on with it, and then all of a sudden he just decided, I want to wear underwear. I think it really boiled down to the allure of the underwear. He does have really cool underwear, like he's got Batman underwear and Toy Story underwear. He's got a SpongeBob underwear. Who wouldn't want to wear it? And it's been virtually no accidents since the day he just made up his mind that he was going underwear, and there's been no looking back for that boy. Way to go, son. I'm proud of you. Well, folks, that's going to wrap it up for Daddy on Board 115. You can catch me over on The Trending Show. As I said, I'm over there with Natalie. You know her from MommyBeta.com. I'm also going to make another Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe with my pal Clayton Morris. And I'll be back in 7 days with a podcast I will release to you under the title Daddy on Board 116. Until then, Feliz Navidad, mis amigos.